Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast, episode 25. My name is Yuri, and I'm joined by Keishi.
Hey, Yuri, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm pretty good, as you know. Just did a small hike this morning, so a bit tired, but...
So you're physically tired, but you're mentally stimulated, is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, exactly. As awake as I ever was.
I guess I'm kind of in the same boat, because I did go to Hakone on Thursday. And Friday?
Yeah, sounds like it. An exciting trip.
Yeah, lots of walking. So, but overall, you know, I'm bubbling, I'm percolating. My mind is running, racing at 500 miles an hour. So if there might be a lot of bloopers in this one too.
Yeah, I think it's pretty inspiring to get out of the city and out into the nature.
Definitely. And speaking of nature, I do have a drink that I bought from there. It's nothing special. It's just a water bottle from Hakone. So that's my drink of the day, aside from coffee. How about you?
Yeah, so I'm drinking banana yogurt
Kalpis. Banana yogurt Kalpis?
Yeah.
FYI, that's spelled K-A-L-P-I-S for anyone that attempts to mishear this and misunderstand.
Yeah, C-A-L-P-A.
C-A-L-P-I-S.
All right. Yeah, so today I'm drinking...
Ladies and gentlemen, today Keishi's drinking... Banana yellow Kalpis, spelled C-I-L-C-A-L-P-I-S, not C-O-W-P-I-S-S.
Yeah, single S at the end and C-A-L instead of C-O-W. So, all right, anyways, enough about drinks and enough laughing and enough bloopers. What are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about outsourcing and how to outsource when you're doing a side hustle.
Sounds good. So where do we want to start? Do we want to just start by defining what outsourcing is, or?
Yeah, I guess let's start with the basics. What is outsourcing and when and why to outsource? I'll take this on real quick. So outsourcing is simply put hiring out someone else to do your work for you for cheaper, or like, I think, is that about right?
I think so. Not necessarily for cheaper, as we'll talk about in the reasons of why to outsource, because one of the reasons is just to free up your time. So sometimes it might not be cheap, sometimes it might be cheap, but I guess it's always cheaper than, or it should always be cheaper than you spending your own time on whatever it is that you're outsourcing though.
So
just one thing that I think it's worth adding is to kind of point out the difference of outsourcing versus like proper hiring, whether it's part-time staff or full-time staff. I think outsourcing generally happens on like either project basis or like hourly basis, and it's a contractor, so it's an independent party. Whereas when you hire somebody on your team, quote unquote, properly, then there's more admin work involved, and like it's usually much more, I guess, serious of a relationship between the two parties. Mm-hmm. Whereas outsourcing is more like a business hiring another business, so you can do a contract, and then you can not work with the person for a long time, and then you can hire them again, or you can hire somebody else.
So
I guess there's a bit less commitment than when you do a typical hiring.
Yeah, so it's like a per project basis. Like if you need something done, something special, you can hire. For example, if you want someone to design your album cover, if you're a musician, you'll go to some artist for a quick project and say, hey, I want this design for my album. Can you come up with one? And that's it.
Yeah. Definitely.
But the only reason I brought up like for cheaper, because I think whoever's listening, if they hear the word outsource, they kind of imagine a company that has like products and they will outsource the manufacturing to China or to another country where it could be done for cheap.
Yeah, that's right. Or a call center. That's something that everybody hates pretty much because the service you get is usually not as good. But I think in terms of side hustles, if you do outsourcing right, it can be a great, great lever that can have your business grow much faster than it otherwise would.
Yeah. So... I guess then if we already answered the question why to outsource, and the reason why is if you can't do something or if you want to free up your time, that's when you go to a person and say, hey, can you do this for me? And then you pay them.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you either don't have the time or you don't have the skill or you don't have either. And those are pretty much the main reasons why you would want to do this.
What about for when? When would someone... Or when should someone consider outsourcing?
That's a good question. And I think it really depends on the person. Because like if you're a banker that has a lot of money in your bank but doesn't have much time, then outsourcing from the very beginning might be a relatively good idea. Although I think it's never good to just jump straight into outsourcing something that you haven't done yourself before to at least some extent.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, I think as long as, in my case, it was, I just decided I would spend this amount of money and try to invest it into a site. And that's when I started outsourcing. Essentially, once I realized that I can only do so much myself.
Mm-hmm. That's a humbling thought to have. Because most people think like, I'm going to do everything myself and I'm going to make it just right and perfect.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I think that's the biggest, I think for a lot of people, that's actually the biggest hurdle in their way to actually scaling something. And it definitely was a hurdle for me too for a long time where, like, we all like to think that we're perfect, right?
Yeah.
Like the way we do things is perfect, and then somebody else does them in a different way. We like to see that as being not so good, even when it's equally good or good enough. Mm. So I think that's a good, that's a big obstacle in somebody going out there and succeeding with outsourcing. But yeah, if you have money and feel like it, you can try it from the very beginning. But I'd say personally, especially if somebody's doing this as a side hustle, I just recommend like do it yourself first. And then once you start seeing your first success, then either start investing your capital into the business and start outsourcing. Or if your business starts making some cash flow, then just take that cash and reinvest it back into the business and get other people to do some work for you.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that point. You first make sure that whatever you're doing is viable, that it sells. And once it starts working, once you start earning income on that, you know, then you have money to play around with and try and outsource some of it. Otherwise, you know, there's no point in out. I don't think there's no 100% no reason not to, but I'd rather wait until you start making profit before you jump into it.
Yeah, I think that's the safe route. It might cost you a couple months, but other than that, I don't see any drawbacks to it. Yeah.
Is it?
And also, I'd point out that it's a completely different skill to be able to do the actual task and to be able to hire and manage somebody to do the task for you.
Hmm.
So I think there's some learning curve there too.
So,
but you'll be better at the managing part if you know how it's done yourself rather than.
So I guess that kind of veers into my question: is it easy to outsource?
That's a good question. What are your thoughts on this?
I hate to say it depends, but of course it, you know, there's many levels of looking at this. I think if you have money or if you have like a spare, say $30 to $50 lying around, it is as easy as going to Upwork.com and asking someone to design a logo for you or whatever other place where you can find freelancers. To that extent, it is a fairly simple process. You go there, you post up a job. You accept whoever applies to it. You send them the cash. You give them what you want. They send you the result. You send them the cash if you're satisfied, and that's it. However, as you mentioned, you know, on a managerial level, you know, it depends because you can provide, for example, a really bad write-up of what you want. Maybe you don't know what you want. You just tell them, hey, I want some art. Make sure it really pops and fizzles, and I want it to really impress people. And that really tells nothing to the artist. Like, they're like, huh? You want it to pop? What do you mean by pop? So that's where I guess the managerial skill comes into play, and how well you can explain what you want.
I'd have to pretty much agree. I'd say the technical process is easy. You just go to somewhere where people are looking for jobs, and you do a job post and then hire somebody to do whatever it is that you need to do for you. But I think on the practical level, I think it's one of the most difficult things that I've had to learn, I'd say, in my side hustle.
Why would you say it was the most difficult for you?
Because I think it's just so, how to say it, multifaceted. Like there's so many different things that you have to learn. Like on the surface, it just, yeah, go to Upwork or whatever. Say, I need a writer, hire the writer, pay the writer, get the article, publish the article. Sounds really easy. But I think, one, you have to know how to hire the right people, which is, I think, an entire episode in itself. Two, you need to know how to provide good instructions to the right person, which is another full episode, I think, worth of like learning of how to actually do it.
Mm.
And then I think more than anything else, especially in my case, it was just overcoming the thought of, one, it has to be perfect, and two, it has to be my way.
Yeah.
Because essentially you have to let go of what you believe is ideal, and you have to give it some leeway, right? You still have to kind of try to get what you want out of it. But you're never going to get it 100%,
yeah,
unless you're like Steve Jobs or something and you're mean to people.
Yeah. Agreed.
So you kind of got to let go, right? And I feel like that's, it probably depends on your personality and stuff like that. But in my case, I think that was so far one of the most difficult things that I had to learn how to do, is just to leave things up to people. Because for a long time, I was actually doing the things, right? I was writing the articles, I was creating the graphics, I was whatever. I was in kind of the execution mode.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you outsource something, then you just kind of, you just let it go. And once it gets back to you, provide feedback, but it's never going to be 100% your, it's never going to be the same as what you would have done, because the other person is not you, right?
Yeah. I mean, even you can't get it right 100%, even though it could be right in your eyes.
Yeah, exactly. But again, I think if you essentially index your work at 100%, even though it's never 100%, then you're never going to get 100%.
Yeah.
And whether the 80% is actually better work than what you would have done, I think it really depends on who you hire and what work they do, but it's never going to be exactly what you imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the hardest part, is to just be okay with that.
Yeah.
Because it is okay, but it's hard to feel like it's okay, especially in the beginning.
I think it's also hard, harder for people in creative fields, because, you know, if you're doing art, if you're doing anything that requires the artistic touch, and like, you know, there's the artistic integrity of things, and there's definitely always a way of how to go about doing things, and it's always your way and not the other way. So I think it would be hard for someone in a more creative field, like music or art, to let go of their work and pass an aspect of it to someone else.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think, if you're just outsourcing somebody to, I don't know, to scan your business cards or do some sort of repetitive task like that, it's pretty easy, because the outcome is pretty clear and there's only one proper outcome of the task.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, with things like writing or design or something, there's essentially infinitely many possibilities.
Yeah.
And that's where kind of your opinion of what is ideal and what the writer actually produces can kind of diverge.
So having said that, what can one outsource?
Yeah.
I think we touched upon it real quick, but you know, if someone's thinking, all right, they know what outsourcing is. They know whether it's easy or not. But, you know, they're probably still thinking, all right, what can I outsource? Because a lot of this requires the side hustler to make a list of everything that they do, their responsibilities.
Yeah.
And, you know, take inventory and start choosing what they can give away. So what can they give away?
Yeah. So I think largely speaking, there's two categories of things. And one is time intensive tasks. So we all have only 24 hours in a day. And we got to think wisely how we spend those 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to, let's say, grow a content publishing business, and purposefully, I'm not going to call it blog because you could do blog yourself. But if you want to build a content publishing business and either have one really large site or multiple sites or whatever, eventually you're going to have to outsource, because you can only write so many articles in a day, right?
Yeah.
Or if you're, I don't know, if there's something involving design or things like that, you're going to have to outsource, because those are things that take a lot of time. Just require raw
effort.
Raw effort, just a lot of work. I think the other thing is just quick and repetitive tasks, and that's stuff that it's stuff that you could do yourself. But when you add all the time, and when you add all the time that you're dreading doing it, you're probably better off outsourcing it. Like if you have things in your process where it's like moving things from one document into another, or like copy pasting something from a spreadsheet into a document, or something like that. That's really easily teachable and that's repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's good. So that's kind of at the high level. I think when we think about outsourcing, a lot of people just think writing, design, and then sort of like virtual admin sort of stuff. So copy pasting and creating documents and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think the other thing that I just thought of is if you're trying to start a side hustle, but don't have the time, another thing you can outsource is like getting somebody to clean your house. That will save you probably a couple hours a week, right?
Yeah.
Or an hour a week or something.
Or your food preparation.
Yeah, or your food preparation, exactly. You could order pre-prepared meals or something.
I know that fitness people, fitness influencers, they post that. Well, they post advertisements of that. But like, I think anyone that goes to the gym and is serious about it, they definitely do outsource their meal prep to some company.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I guess the whole point of this is I'm trying to say is you just got to think outside the box. So maybe your blog is centered around you, so you have to be the sole writer on the blog. But if that's the case, then try to outsource as much as possible outside of writing so that you have as much time as possible to focus on what matters the most for you, which is you actually writing the stuff, right?
Yeah.
So outsource your cooking, outsource your cleaning, outsource your
sleeping,
graphic design. We can't do that yet, unfortunately. Or if you're trying to build a content publishing business, then I'd argue your main priority is to plan out a lot of content and to kind of decide on the direction of what sort of content you will publish. In that case, just outsource the writing itself, outsource the editing, outsource the formatting, the publishing, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So I guess the other way, yeah. So one of the frameworks was kind of time-intensive tasks and quick but repetitive tasks. But I guess the other framework would be to look at and how core the task itself is to your success, and kind of try to outsource the non-core tasks. So whether that's accounting or design or editing or whatever it might be that is not core to your business.
Yeah. So what about you personally? What do you outsource?
I think quite similar to you. So I have a couple of writers that I work with regularly that pretty much produce all the content for my websites. Mm-hmm. I don't know, for my aviation site, which I write myself. And then I have an editor that's helping me edit some of the articles. I hope to increase her responsibility and have her do more of the stuff so that I don't have to read as much of the articles in as much detail as I do nowadays when I edit them. And then I work with a virtual assistant who's helping me a lot with like repetitive things like taking briefs from Notion, which we're using together for planning content for this, but essentially it's like a project management tool, let's call it, for this purpose. Let's call it that. So it takes the briefs from there and copy pastes them and creates a document that I then send to the writers. He generates my Amazon affiliate links. He formats some of my posts and things like that are really easy, but they just repeat and repeat and repeat and end up taking a lot of time and that are kind of frustrating to do once you've got used to not doing them.
Yeah, I do similar. The writing, the editing, and not so much I'll run after Grammarly. quick and repetitive tasks is something I probably do because, you know, if I have to come up with images for my stuff, I do it. It doesn't take much, but, you know, if you count it, all the effort that's put in per article, and if I do like 10 articles a month or something, then that's quite a bit of chunk of time that could have been saved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you also had some videos done in the past, right? Yeah. I think you mentioned it a couple of times on the podcast.
Yeah, I've outsourced articles, videos, trying to think. Lately, I've been kind of looking at PDF design because they have apparently PDF planners, like really aesthetic ones, really artistic ones, seem to get a lot of attention. If you search that on Instagram or on Pinterest, those get like thousands and thousands of likes just out of curiosity, but clearly design is not more my forte, nor, you know, do I want to just yet invest hundreds and hundreds of hours to learn it, but, you know, I can get a result quite quickly. So that's something I've been also kind of thinking of, you know, asking a designer to come up with that.
That's a good point. Yeah. I think that's actually a great point that we should mention in the what to outsource question that we're talking about right now is if something is going to cost you more in time to learn than it would be to just hire somebody else to actually do it for you. Unless it's super core to your business and you actually really want to know how to do it, it's probably just better to outsource.
Also, I would, I think this would fall in line with what you said, but experimentation, like, again, you know, if you don't have the ability to do it, nor the time, but it's something that you want to try out, then I think it's worth investing, just like a one-shot attempt, or a few times and see if it sticks.
Yeah, I think so. And sometimes you can even outsource like just parts of the process, right? So if you have a long process, you just take the repetitive part and outsource it to a virtual assistant, or you just take the editing, outsource it to the editor. And we'll talk about this later, but like if you lay out your entire process, you'll probably find so many places where you can outsource stuff fairly easily. So once we talk about this, I'll go into deeper, but yeah, just first knowing your process and how you're doing things and just understanding it in detail is a good start to figure out what you can actually outsource.
Yeah. So in terms of outsourcing, someone might think, all right, I have a thing that I'd like to outsource. Maybe it's my logo. Maybe I want them to do research. The next step is where would they find people to outsource? So I'm thinking my first choices are Upwork and Fiverr. Both of them have freelancers where you can post up a job and people will apply to you. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I think pretty much my virtual assistant I found on onlinejobs.ph, I think. It's essentially a place where you can find a lot of people based in the Philippines who are affordable and very nice to work with, very nice people. And you can just post the job posting there for my writers, editors, and pretty much anything else. I usually just go to Upwork because there's a lot of people doing all sorts of different jobs with a lot of different experiences. And I've hired cheap people there, I hired expensive people there. I've actually done some work for Upwork myself, and I think it's a great platform.
Yeah.
Fiverr, yeah, I think it's good for like smaller experiments if you're looking for something to just try out at low cost. but also I think recently there's people that charge way more than $5, so there might be some quality there.
I'm not sure if anything's $5 on the website anymore. That was their angle when they first started out, like every gig $5.
Yeah.
But now it's like they've definitely strayed away from there.
Yeah, I guess the more services they sell, the more commission they make. So
yeah, it's like definitely. So I guess it's pretty simple, you know, just a matter of going to one of these sites, knowing what you want, posting that job, finding the right person, accepting them, paying them, done deal, and then you get your end result. But the next question is, how much would it cost?
Yeah, so I think it's like asking how much would a t-shirt cost? Probably anywhere between $5 and thousands of dollars. But it really, to steal your answer to the other question, it really depends, because one, it depends on what the task is that you want to outsource. So do you want somebody to program an app for you, or do you want somebody to do design for you, or do you just want somebody who will copy paste phone numbers from a bunch of websites into a spreadsheet? Like, those are all very different levels of work, right? And then it also depends on the quality of the person that you choose, or I guess the quality they perceive themselves to be, since they're partly setting the price. But yeah, like we talked, generally I pay writers about $25 to $30 per 1,000 words. You said you've paid up to $100 or so. When I wrote for a magazine, I charge up to like 30 cents per word. So that's what, $300 per 1,000 words. So I think the scale is really wide, and there's an opportunity for everybody to outsource regardless of what your budget is, pretty much. Do you have a better defined answer to this than I do?
For anyone listening, they might think, oh, it's expensive. I hate to go back to it depends, but like, I think it's definitely within the affordable range. If you want an article, you can probably get it as low as, for example, your case, $25 or something. So $25 isn't that really that much money, considering, you know, I spend like $5 a day or less on coffee or something. So in my case, yeah, I'll spend between 30 and say 45, 50 for an article. The $100 one was an experiment. Then there was like a $500 video that was also an experiment. That was just, I was just playing around to see. Right.
Those are pricey experiments.
Yeah. The video one was like, I didn't have the audience for it anyway. So it was like a bit of a, I wouldn't call it a waste, but you know, I don't have the audience to put out a video to. So it's just like, you post it out there and no one looks at it. And that's the end of that. Unless you figure out a way to promote it. But to anyone listening, it doesn't cost that much. You can definitely work with people that are just starting out. They want to build their portfolio. They may charge less. Yeah. And if you want someone, you know, much more perfectionist, or, you know, with a solid track record, you end up paying a little more. But I guess it's best to go on these platforms and determine the baseline price for whatever it is that you need, whether it's art, music, or articles, or whatever it is. But long story short, I think anyone can do it, and it wouldn't cost an arm and a leg on a freelance basis.
Yeah, exactly. I think just to take blogging as an example, if you want to start outsourcing writing and you're doing like a typical content site, I think once your site starts earning like $50 or $100 a month, you can easily start outsourcing a couple articles a month. If you have, let's say, I don't know, a couple thousand to invest, you can use that to outsource dozens of articles. So it really depends on your budget, but even with as little as $50 to $100 a month, I think you can do some meaningful outsourcing in case of blogging.
Exactly. So now that we covered the cost, I guess the next question a person might be thinking is, all right, but I want to do this just right. How can I do this just right and not make any mistakes? So is there a correct way to outsource?
That's a good question. And I guess there is a right way and a wrong way, I would say. And in this case, I'd say it's pretty absolute to some extent. But beyond that, it depends. Mm-hmm. But I think the point up to which it's absolute is, one, you have to get the right person. And to get the right person, one, you really need to know what you want. And two, you really need to be able to present to somebody what it is that you want. And three, you need to know how to choose the right person out of those that apply, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd say, again, I think here is where it's good if you've done it yourself, because I think one of the most important things is to have your processes documented well. And sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's more difficult. So like, if you just need to copy paste something from a website to a spreadsheet, then it's really easy to create a process around that and say, go here, take this, put it here. Whereas with writing, it's more of a guideline rather than a procedure. Mm-hmm. But in either case, you need to have the systems in place. The other thing is, yeah, when you're looking for the right person, I think just asking a couple of relevant questions and sorting through the applications aggressively is, I think, one of the things that's most important, actually, at least from my... Because that's the other thing. In the past, I just used to hire whoever applied, pretty much. But now I'm much more selective who I actually try to hire. And I think it's much better to have to post the same job post like four times to find the right person than to hire somebody out of the first batch just for the sake of hiring somebody. At least from my experience, it eventually results in a waste of time and money if you just force yourself to hire somebody rather than hiring the right person and being patient.
I think for your first attempt at outsourcing, you should probably go with whoever and learn, because you're still learning too, you know? So if someone's listening, they're like, all right, let me ask for an article or a logo design. I think they should kind of, sift through the applicants if there are applicants, but it's also a learning process for you because, you know, this won't be your last time outsourcing.
I'll rephrase that. I think that's good, but I'd rephrase it. Do not hire anyone. Try to do your best in selecting the right person, but if it just happens not to be the right person, then don't beat yourself over it, because, again, as I said in the beginning, just the hiring and the managing the people and stuff like that is a completely different skill set from like doing the work yourself, right? And if you haven't had an experience like that before, then essentially you have to learn all of that from scratch. So you got to learn how to write a job post, how to select the right person, what to ask them, how to read their application, what to watch out for, like what are the red flags on somebody's cover letter or application.
Like
clearly, if you're hiring an editor and somebody sends you a letter all in lowercase letters or something, then that's clearly not a good match, right? So sometimes it's more subtle than that, but sometimes it's as simple as that. Or if somebody applies for a writer's job and tells you they're the best writer ever, but they don't put the before the best, they're probably not the right match either, right? So watch for those type of obvious mistakes.
So
actually learning how to screen those applications is a skill that you got to learn. And then learning how to create briefs for those people so that they can do the right work for you is another skill you got to learn. Mm-hmm. Learning how to create instructions, learning how to create guidelines, SOPs, and stuff like that. It's all something that you got to learn from scratch if you haven't done something similar before. So obviously, as with learning anything, there's going to be hiccups, there's going to be wasted money, there's going to be wasted time, there's going to be a lot of frustration in some cases. There's going to be, you're going to feel like you're going to feel like the other person's not good enough, whereas in reality, it's actually you not providing instructions that are good enough, or you're not choosing the right person, right? So I think there's also learning to take responsibility for what you do and essentially taking ownership of what's happening rather than being like, oh yeah, I hired this guy. He was so bad. Outsourcing sucks. Like, that's not the case. You hired the wrong guy and you probably suck at hiring, so get better.
My thoughts on this are, well, in terms of, is there a right way and a wrong way to outsource and manage? I guess on the topic of managing, if you are the person that is outsourcing, requesting a certain project to be done, it is on you to communicate properly what you want in the most detailed way possible and in the most simplest way possible. So if they don't understand, if they mess up somewhere, it is on you. It is on you because you fail to communicate exactly what you want down to the T. So in that sense, there is a right and wrong way, I think.
Exactly. And it just taking ownership. We sound pretty harsh in this episode.
Well, I think
it's on you.
I mean, in the case of between, a freelancer and a side hustler, you know, it's a manager definitely, you know, like, because I've given out my share, my fair share of bad requests before I understood how to do them. So it definitely starts out with the request, and the request, it's on the post, it's on the side hustler, it's on the person that's making the request to provide all the information necessary for whoever's going to do it to get it done right.
Yeah, exactly. If you're, let's say you're trying to get somebody to do a logo for you, and they send you the first draft back, and you're like, why did you use green here and not red? Mm-hmm. Then it's probably because you didn't say that you wanted the logo to be green, yeah. Right? So it's also, again, like there's, you can always ask for revisions, and of course you can be unhappy with work that you get every now and then, but being unhappy with work and asking for revision or giving constructive feedback is different than just getting the work and calling it bad work and ending there just because the freelancer sucks, right? That's rarely the case.
Yeah.
It's usually the case of you not giving enough instructions, or you're not providing enough feedback, or frankly, just you being lazy. Like when I outsourced articles in the very beginnings, I got work back and I was just too lazy to give the feedback and say, hey, I don't like this, I don't like that. I would just say, yeah, outsourcing sucks, I'm just going to write everything myself. Mm-hmm. But then again, I just realized that you only have 24 hours a day and there's more fun things to do than writing articles about a bunch of random topics, like going to Hakone or going hiking or something.
Yeah, well, I'm not writing those.
Right, so if it's frustrating in the beginning.
It's always frustrating.
It's always frustrating.
You can't exactly overstep that little area unless you're super talented and you got it right off the bat.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess what I'm trying to get at here is that we can kind of give you some tips and some pointers like we did, but at the end of the day, it's still gonna take some experimentation and quote unquote on the job learning training to actually become good at it or to become decent at it.
And at the same time, you also have to remember that you're dealing with a person, you know, with feelings, and you have to. Did you just laugh? We'll edit.
Like the first thought that came to my mind was that you just screamed at some freelancer or something in the past.
I've never screamed because like it's all done online. But you know, you probably feel some frustration, and you're like, why is this guy not getting it? Why is he so stupid? Blah blah blah.
Yeah.
So you know, at the same time, you have to remember that you're dealing with, you know, other people. So you have to be thoughtful in how you provide your feedback and how you request the changes and whatnot. And that's also not an easy thing to do because, you know, if something is not done to your liking, you'd be like, oh, what the hell is this? Blah, blah, blah. But that's probably on you. And, you know, responding in certain ways like correct this, correct that, correct this, correct that will not be read in the way that you had hoped when you sent that message.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say that in general, I guess there's three ways it can go. If you get your side of the process right, and if you do the right brief, the right job post and stuff like that. And I think one is it all goes great. So you ask somebody to do the work for you, you hire them and they do an excellent job and you're like, oh, wow, cool.
Yeah.
Two is, so the first case goes, it rarely goes that way, but when it goes that way, it's great. Two is it goes really bad and like you can immediately tell that the person doesn't know how to do the task or it's a complete mismatch. In which case it's fine. It's like you can have 100% hit rate, just end the relationship tactfully and try to find somebody else, right? And again, I'd say that's a small part of the cases if you do your hiring right. And then in most cases it will be, oh, it's an okay job, but it could use some tweaks. And I think that's where the communication you've been talking about and just being human and talking to the person, explaining what you're expecting and most of all improving your procedures and guidelines and systems. I feel like that's where you can gain the most, because probably the people that are great are very expensive. The people who are really bad are either really cheap or they're really expensive without justifying it with their work. Whereas in the middle, I feel like you can find affordable people that you can kind of point in the right direction and get to do a great job for you over time.
And on the topic of, you know, dealing with freelancers on a human level, I remember in the past, you know, I gave some, you know, not rough feedback, but I just said, like, I had a list of things like do this, do that, don't do this, do this because this, do this, don't because that, don't do it because that. And the freelancer didn't respond to that favorably. And I could see now from their perspective, you know, like they were hired for a one-time project and it's okay to get feedback, but if you give feedback, but if you're responding with a list of things like 10 bullet points, try to do this, don't do that, try to do this, don't do that. Like, then it's like, all right, you're going to pay me for all of that? Or like, you know, where are you coming from with this? Like, so you have to keep in mind how you address the person, you know, because you might be salaried or you know, they're not salaried. They're working on an hourly basis or on a project basis. So they have to consider that also if they're going to apply your feedback. So yeah, it's a very nuanced game, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I think you're much better at this. Generally, I try to be nice, but I think a lot of the harsher emails that I send out to people I work with, you see before I send them out or just after I send them out. Sometimes you have me edit parts out. Sometimes I send them before I edit parts out. But yeah, just being nice in general.
Yeah, I always try to run my emails past other people as well. There's also like the 24-hour rule. If you're going to send out an email giving feedback and whatnot, you know, you should probably sleep on it and come back another day and also have another person look at it. Like coworkers said, like, you should probably move like some things around and move this part first so it sounds more fair. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a good point. Because some things you can't really see from your perspective and you really need someone else to read it.
Yeah, exactly. And I like the 24-hour rule. It's pretty hard to implement for me.
Yeah.
But because I'm not so patient. But yeah, especially if it's negative feedback or if it's a bit more like, hey, what are you doing? Get back on track sort of thing. Because that will happen too. Like, you know, with some of the writers, like I just had to say, hey, when we started working together, the work was so great. And now it's kind of starting to, the quality is starting to deteriorate. So what's going on? Can you do something about that? And those are not the easiest emails to send, but they either work or they don't. And if they don't, then you just got to terminate the relationship anyways. And if they work, that's great because you don't have to hire and train a new person. Sometimes you just have to send those emails.
But definitely, I think doing it tactfully and doing it respectfully is important. Because even with that, hey, your last article was great. You know, actually, another thing I wanted to bring up, there's that feedback. There's that sandwich feedback approach where you give them a compliment first, then you tell them what you want to tell them, then you follow up with a compliment. You know, most people will, well, not most people, but like sometimes we are aware or we kind of anticipate it. Like, oh, you just want to give me that bad feedback. That's why you're starting with the good feedback first. But getting that is much better than just getting bad feedback all the time.
Yeah, I know some people like it. I personally, I hate that because I just like if I'm going to tell somebody they suck, then they suck.
Well, right?
I can tell you're nice. Oh, you suck. And by the way, you're nice. Personally, I just feel it's just better to be direct because like you said, I feel like most people essentially know that if an email has three paragraphs and the first paragraph is nice, then the second paragraph is probably going to be not so nice. So I like starting with the bad news personally, just like being more direct. But yeah, I think there's people who prefer the hamburger approach and I think it works.
I mean, you know, I can tell maybe from your perspective because you haven't worked under anyone, like you've been self-employed, right? So like maybe you don't have to deal with feedback coming down to you. But I think for anyone, even if they're aware of the sandwich or hamburger, the hamburger, I think it's called, the hamburger approach, even if they're conscious of it, I think it's still, if you're going to compare the two, it's still better to get that because at least one of them tells that the person that they're not a complete waste. But if they're getting like, you know, good feedback and then constructive feedback, but if they're getting like bad feedback all the time, then it's not going to be a happy relationship.
That's a good point. So I'm not saying they shouldn't give good feedback. All I'm saying is if there's negative feedback, give negative feedback. If there's good feedback, give great feedback 10 times more. Like if somebody does something great, then shower them with praise. I think that's one. It feels good to when somebody tells you, oh, great job. But I feel like personally, I think like rather than mixing them into one message, they're just like separate occasions.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the hamburger sandwich that you're talking about, it's more like, when you're giving somebody negative feedback, make sure to wrap it in good feedback too.
Yeah. Well, would you, for example, would you send an email like, hey, your past work was great. What's happening now? Would you send that?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Because I would send...
And the work got better.
Okay. Well, I would send it a little differently. I'd be like, you know, hey, I really liked article X. Article Y seems a bit different. Or I wouldn't put different. I would probably phrase it somehow else. But I would say, can you make it more like article X? I don't because article Y isn't good for 1, 2, 3, and 4. I think that's more fair, or at least it's more telling to them of what's good and what's bad. And at the same time, it's not like, hey, this is bad. What happened? Because what happened is kind of an open-ended question, and it just is going to send their mind into overthinking. And be like, oh no, what did I do wrong? Oh, do they hate me?
I think it really depends on the situation, though. Because in this case, the guy was just, it seems like a really nice guy. But like you could just tell the overall quality just started slipping away.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if I have to point out, again, like sometimes people do sloppy work, right? Because they're just human nature, I think. It's like, sometimes you just don't feel like doing the work or whatever. But when it just goes on for too long, you're like, hey, it's not like, you know that I guess I kind of use the sandwich, but not so explicitly. I just like, hey, you know, I like your past work, which is why I continued giving you thousands of dollars worth of articles over the last
that way, man.
Few months.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, which is why I continued to outsource a lot of articles to you over the last few months. But I just can't help feel like in the recent couple of batches, the articles have been going down in quality. Mm. What's going on?
Mm. Okay.
Like how would you phrase that? What would you say? I guess you explained it.
Well, there's some things that are not necessary, like mentioning, hey, your last work was great, which is why I continued giving you thousands of dollars in work. Like the thousands of dollars in work, you kind of want to emphasize.
I didn't say thousands of dollars. I think I said like why I continued outsourcing a lot of articles.
I would still take that part out because like I know what you're trying to say there. But I would leave it out because there's something that's not quite right about it. I can't quite put my finger on it. It's like you want to express that, hey, you know, I do trust you and I think you do great work, which is why blah blah blah. We worked for, you know, for all these things together. But it also seems like it places a heavier guilt on the reader, and maybe that's what you kind of want to do. I'm not sure, but. And they're like, oh, you're right. They're right. I would omit that simply because I don't want that extra emotional burden on them. There's some things I think are better left unsaid.
I think you're a nicer person. So. Okay. No, because I mean, in my mind, it's good feedback. It's like, hey, I've been outsourcing. I've been asking you to write a lot of articles for me because I think the stuff you're doing is great. To me, that's the nice part of the sandwich. Maybe too, it doesn't sound like the nice part of the sandwich, but
I think it's unnecessary. I think it's unnecessary because you have to.
But then we just go to the negative. We just be like, hey, the quality of work's been pretty bad these days. What's going on?
I wouldn't phrase it that way either. Again, it's an open-ended question. It's like asking, hey, what's wrong with you? It's like, what do you mean? You know.
But sometimes, yeah. But I feel like in this case, that was the only thing you could do. Like again, if I have to spend like 5 hours to be like, hey, in this article it was this, in next article it was that, it was here it was this, and it was that. It's like sometimes it's like the entire ship was sinking, right? It wasn't like, hey, your engine is out, but it was more like, hey, the entire freaking ship is sinking. How can we save it? Like it was really hard to point to any single problem. It was just like you could feel the overall quality was going down.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, at least if you can give specific points, then they know what to address. Otherwise, if it's so vague, it's like kind of getting a vague task in the first place. Hey, I want you to do this. And then you ask, hey, what happened? Because you don't want to deal with the vagueness.
Oh, no, I mean, I gave a couple of pointers. I said something like, yeah, usually you don't hit the word count. Because usually I give a word count range and I just pay the same amount, regardless of whether it's like slightly under or slightly over or right within the range or something. Yeah. And I was like, hey, I feel like the word count is, even when there's stuff to write about or topics to expand on, I feel like you're just staying at the very low end of the word count, and there's more and more grammar mistakes and stuff like that. But overall, I just feel like the entire quality is going down. Can you do something about that?
Okay, we'll agree on this point. I don't want to say agree to disagree, but yeah, not that I completely disagree.
And again, I think it's also there's people with different styles, right? People have different styles. People communicate in different ways, and. Yeah, I don't think my way is better or worse than the sandwich or hamburger. Yeah. I think it's different.
Listen, I don't like the hamburger approach either, but between the two, I'd rather get the hamburger approach.
That's a good question. I don't know which I'd prefer more. I definitely like when a client says, hey, good job, in a kind of isolated instance. Yeah. But if it was like, hey, great job, but with this thing, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, good job. I don't know. I just feel like it's less genuine, I guess.
Kind of allows you to enter the conversation easier. If you start off with negative news up front, in a way, yeah, that's good because you dish out what you wanted to say. but it already puts the person on defense because, you know, no one likes hearing bad news. And if that's all they hear, again, I know you're not giving all bad news all the time, but at the same time, you know, maybe they're getting bad news elsewhere. But, you know, if a person just gets bad feedback after bad feedback, it's they're not going to be happy about it too. And I think the relationship would deteriorate. So look, I'll admit, yeah, to me, like sometimes the hamburger approach, I'd be like, I'm expecting it. Oh, I know if I hear good news first, then I know bad news will follow up later. But sometimes when you're not thinking, when you're not on alert, like, and expecting it, it's easier to swallow and it's easier to deal with.
Yeah, I wonder. I guess it depends both on the person that's giving the feedback and also the receiver of the feedback. Because I think the other way to look at it is like some people just get good feedback. They feel like, oh, cool, they're happy. And then slam. Yeah. And it's like happiness is reality minus expectations. And then like after the first part of the hamburger, you just set your expectations high. And then you get like this huge negative blow that makes the reality even worse for you. But I don't know. I think it really depends. I just feel you got to feel out the actual situation at that given time and what the other party is like.
Yeah. For anyone listening to this, you're thinking, oh boy, Kaishin, you're really going at it. This does not mean anything between the two of us. What it means is managing people and just providing feedback, you know, dealing with the people is not easy. You know, it's not an easy skill to master, let alone it's not a black and white science, which is why we're kind of going back and forth on it.
Yeah, not to stay on the hamburger topic for too long, but I just one last thought. I just wonder if the hamburger approach is more about the person that's giving the feedback rather than the person receiving the feedback. But again, I don't know, because sometimes it's hard to send negative feedback, right? So maybe it's, hey, if I give some plus minus is zero sort of thinking both on the sender side and I guess on the receiver side, yeah.
Well, you can just make it a sandwich, like a sandwich without the second bread. It's just like it's an open sandwich. Send him an open sandwich. Hey, I really liked X, Y, and Z, but can you fix A, B, and C? And that's it. And can you maintain that A, B, and C for the rest of the articles without saying, hey, this is terrible?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think if you're just giving general feedback about some piece of work, then I think it's always good to say, hey, A, B, and C is good, but can you do something about D and E. Like, I think the case that I was talking about was kind of extreme because there was almost nothing positive to mention at the time because it just the entire quality was going down. But on a day to day, yeah, definitely the open sandwich. I'd still go either good, 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 bad, bad, or bad, 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 good, good, rather than good, good, bad, bad, good, good. But yeah, I think mixing the two.
So I guess maybe instead of the hamburger approach, there should be the open sandwich approach, which we've invented. So if anyone wants feedback consulting services, the open sandwich approach to giving feedback has been trademarked at the time of this podcast. So if you want to learn how to give feedback, you'll have to consult with Keishi and Yuri's Consulting Feedback Services LLC, which will be LLC'd upon the release of this podcast. Just kidding.
All right. That was a long discussion about
sandwiches. I'm a little hungry now. So... the final question I kind of want to wrap up with is, we've covered this in a way, but just to get a person to jump into it, what can you outsource right now? If someone's listening, they have a side hustle going, whether it's a blog or a vlog, what can they do right now? And the reason why I bring this up is if you've never done outsourcing before, right now it's still a mental thing. It's like a airy, vague thing in your head. And you're not sure how to do it. And the best way to jump into it and get used to it is to just try it for the first time, and once you've done it before, it'll be easier to do it later.
I think if it's related to blogging and it's not something super special in terms of the topic or the difficulty, then definitely trying to outsource the actual writing. Or I've never done this in a separated way, but I've worked with clients in similar manner. Just outsource the research and do the writing yourself. Mm-hmm. Because that's the other thing. Like sometimes looking for the information takes a lot of time and writing takes a lot of time. But looking for the information, you can only find so much, whereas the writing is pretty open-ended. So you might be more particular about it. So if you just have somebody research the different points that you want to mention in the article and just summarize them for you in a few bullet points or something, so that you can then take that and write the article itself, I think that's a good start. Anything else that comes to your mind?
I think just if you want a logo, That's a real quick thing to do. If you don't have a logo, but like just, you know, start something little that maybe you don't even need, but just to get you going. You can ask for a logo. You can ask for, an image, a cover, an ebook cover. You can ask them to research a topic, and or you can ask them, yeah, like you said, write up an article, or come up with like a 5-second podcast introduction, like music intro, or for your vlog. Something that's quick and painless.
Yeah, those all sound good. I'd say, designing a logo is good because it's essentially the price range is anywhere from $5 to tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands. Personally, for most businesses, I wouldn't pay more than $100, $200 probably.
You can go the Nike approach, as they came up with their logo, I think.
Yeah, how much did they pay for their check mark? Yeah, this is slightly off topic, but I was watching this video of a, I guess he's doing pretty well with design work, and he was talking about how much to charge for a logo.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what he was saying is, his first question is, what is the print budget?
Because
if you think about it, like any logo somebody will design probably for like whatever, couple $100, couple $1,000 at most. But then the biggest issue is the risk factor is like, if you design a logo and you print it on whatever 1 million sneaker boxes, and then you realize it looks like something that it shouldn't look like, then you're pretty screwed, right? So there's huge risk involved with designing logos for things that have huge print runs, which is why it's justifiable to charge like $1 million or $2 million for what others would say is a $50 logo.
Yeah. I thought the story was that some students came up with the logo. Maybe I'm wrong. And they got it essentially for free or for cheap labor. There we go. I found it. In 1971, Carolyn Davidson was a graphic design student at Portland State University. In 1969, she met Phil Knight, then assistant professor at PSU, who would go on to found Blue Ribbon Sports and in turn Nike, knew that Davidson was in search of extra funds. So he asked her, he asked Davidson to help him out on some projects at a rate of $2 an hour. So ultimately, I think it cost them $35 for the Nike logo.
That's still more expensive than fiber.
Yeah. So Davidson maintains that she doesn't know how long she worked on a Nike swoosh, but she only charged Knight for 17.5 hours of work, which ended up in a $35 paycheck. So there you go.
Not bad. Yeah. And again, with logos, my thinking on this is that it's better to build something that gives meaning to your logo than to try to create meaning with your logo.
Yeah.
To try to create meaning with your logo. Like at the end of the day, people will remember you for what you do, not for what your logo is.
Exactly.
Same with Nike, everything pretty much. Before you can associate the logo with something, that something has to be valuable first.
Anything else that we want to mention?
Yeah, I think we can pretty much wrap it up. One thing I'd add from my side to close this off, and then you can share if you have any other final thoughts. But I guess I think you got to start somewhere, right? So like we just talked, outsource something simple just so that you can get the feel of what it is like to get somebody to do something for you. And then I feel like the next stage is where you can consistently outsource whatever is driving your business forward. So if it's if you're doing a blog, then if you can consistently outsource writing, if you're doing YouTube videos, then if you can consistently outsource YouTube video editing or some of those really time intensive tasks on a consistent basis, I feel like that makes for a really great platform to start growing your business. And that's when you actually start having a solid business rather than just running some sort of one-man operation, which is not bad, but it's good to scale to an extent, I think.
Yeah. Or like you said earlier, outsource your grocery shopping or cooking or anything else that's taking up your time so you can dedicate more time to the blog. That's another way of outsourcing in a way.
Yeah, exactly. In either case, as we talked, the goal is to save time or to get something done that you can do yourself. Whatever saves you time. If somebody coming to your house every Sunday and doing cleaning for a couple of hours saves you time and opens up your time to do something more valuable, then that's great. Because I guess at the end of the day, the goal is to spend money so that you can make more money.
And have time.
Or so that you can enjoy more time with your family or friends or your girlfriend or do more travel, go to Hakone more often, do hiking more often, and so on.
Agreed. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the 25th Side Hustle and Stuff podcast. And 25 is what happens when you get 5 times 5. Keishi, what else?
What else? 25. I think my sister's 25 years old.
Happy birthday to Keishi's sister if she's listening. And 25 is 1/4 of 100. So we still have about 75, not about exactly 75 more episodes to go to hit the 100 podcast milestone. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the 25th episode of the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast. If you want to start your own side hustle, whether it's a podcast, blog, vlog, and you need a website, be sure to check out Bluehost in the show notes, sidehustlesandstuff.com/E25. We will also list all the tools and all the freelance marketplaces that we mentioned where you can hire people. We will list the sandwich approach, which has probably not been trademarked. That's a joke. You can feel free to steal it, but you can also cite us. And if you want to leave a comment, also, if you're listening and if you enjoy this, definitely, definitely, please leave us a rating, a nice rating, hopefully, on the iTunes podcast section to help us grow a little bit. And Keishi, anything else?
Yeah, and let us know, which do you prefer, the hamburger approach or just the meat patty approach?
Or the open sandwich approach.
Or the open sandwich approach, which is the latest innovation in the space.
We've created it today.
This is a very productive episode. I have my first bloopers, and we've created a new term.
Exactly. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Talk to you later. Blooper time.
Can start with a blooper.
All right, ladies and gents. Oh, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. You're meant. Oh, my voice. Damn, dude, my voice keeps going in and out. Yeah, lots of walking. So again, what's up?
I have.
Yeah, this is gonna be a blooper. Keishi loses it. This is going to be a title of this episode, in case she loses it 2 minutes into the recording.
Give me a second to drink some water.
Okay. Oh, it's 5 o'clock. I should be drinking coffee.
This is the second time I have coughed on the show. And I just...
Wait, what's going on? Are you like laughing or like...
Yeah.
over what? Over the drink?
No,
you know, we'll have to. I'm doing the blooper editing this time around. Well, I'm doing editing this time around, so I'll keep all of this in at the end.
Yeah, no, I...
maybe I should go to the bathroom while you cool down.
Sounds good.
All right, I'll be back in a minute. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah,
okay,
all right. No, because I have banana kalpis. I remembered our discussion about kalpis the other day. Oh. And like this one's yellow.
So. Oh.
All right. Okay. Again. All right. Again. Yeah. So today I'm drinking.
Ladies and gentlemen, today Keishi's drinking banana yellow kalpis.
Yeah. C-A-L-P-A.
C-A-L.
You can't spell the piss part.
Let me.
I said pretty much. Just it depends.
Let me add a blooper. I have to go to the bathroom. Give me a second.
All right, I'm gonna go too, actually.